Hello, all you lovely people. The gallivanting is over. It is time for a podcast. We are here connected and speaking to your brain. And speaking to your brain with me this week are Alan.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well, thank you very much. I forgot what you sounded like for a bit.
It has been a while, hasn't it? I actually feel a little bit awkward because you take a few weeks off and you don't know how to do this stuff anymore. And hopefully Mark. Hello, Mark. Come in, Mark.
I'm still here. I never went away.
No, I heard. I did enjoy listening to the episodes. I wasn't on whilst I was away.
It's weird listening to episodes when you're not in them, isn't it?
No, it's great, actually. I really enjoyed them. I mean, Sarah was fantastic, and then Kyle was fantastic, and it was like a robot double whammy of episodes. Fantastic.
Yeah, we've peaked. We've robot peaked.
So, other than talking to roboticists, what have you been doing recently?
I was looking for a way to synchronize my photos. I use the evil Google Cloud for storing photos. And I thought, while they're super reliable and, you know, I pay for a service, it's entirely possible that sometime they might go away.
Are you insinuating that Google might close a service down?
I'm insinuating that something might go wrong, and for some reason I might. I saw an occasion where someone complained that they got locked out of their Google account. I think it was CGP Grey, and I thought, well, if he can get locked out of his Google account, so could I. And I thought, I don't like the sound of that. I should probably have a backup of my photos. And I found a piece of software called gphotos-sync, which was on GitHub. I just did a bit of, you know, noodling around the internet and found it. And I compiled it, made it into a snap. I haven't published it in the store because I'm testing it. Stuck it on a server, and I now have all my Google Photos and albums and everything synchronized down to a server here. It's really good.
Wow. Okay, that is brilliant. So when I saw this in the show notes, it just has a bullet point that says gphotos sync. And there's a thing in the Linux desktop world called gphoto.
Oh.
So I thought this was going to be a boring, you know, I plugged my phone in and it indexed the pictures on my local computer. But this is far more interesting. So this is a backup of your cloud account, effectively, for your photos.
Yeah, you have to jump through a couple of hoops to get a client.json thing. Like, so you have to do a couple
some sort of credentials.
Yeah, you have to kind of do a bit of a developer-y thing.
A developer-y thing, listen to you.
Well, like, normal users don't click buttons to register for APIs and download credentials files. They type in a username and password and press a button, right?
Right.
This is true.
So it's a bit developer-y. But I put it on the system and I ran and pointed it at a directory and it just sat there and chugged away for a while. In fact, I completely forgot it was running and I came back to 75 gigabytes of photos in a folder.
Holy cow, 75 gigabytes.
Yes, I have all my photos since 1999 in there.
Is it just photos or is that videos as well?
Yeah, videos as well. And albums and anything where they've monkeyed with them or you've edited them in the web, you get all of it downloaded.
So is it in like a directory hierarchy or?
Well, you get two directories. You get one directory that's got all the YYYY and then MM and then DD and then all the photos in there named as your device would have named them, like image 215, 216, JPEG and so on. So however they were uploaded, they come down the same way. And you get another folder called albums. And that, I think it does symlinks. I haven't looked into it too deeply, but it basically is whatever albums you've created in Google Photos, it creates those locally so you can browse them. So actually I've put Plex on the server and told it my photo collection is there, and so I can see locally in a web UI all my photos.
Nice one.
I do a similar thing with Nextcloud where I have Plex sitting alongside it and point it at the same folders.
Ah, that's clever.
Yeah. So I've done something similar, but the other way around. So I use the Dropbox photo sync. So Louise and I share a Dropbox account, both our phones. We take the pictures, Dropbox syncs them. I have Dropbox running on the home server, headless. And then I wrote a script because why wouldn't you?
Yep.
Yeah. Called Fort, which is a photo sort. And it takes the camera uploads directory and dedupes them and sorts them by the camera that took them and the date it took them on. And those are then in a Plex serve directory.
Nice.
But like you were saying, like Dropbox could go away, or I could have a random financial dispute, you know, and they close my account. So I was saying I need another cloud place where my photos exist, because if the house burns down, this is the only other copy of those photos. And I'm under precise instructions that if I ever lose photographs, divorce proceedings will ensue.
So this GPhoto Sync is great, but there's a couple of bugs. Actually, in the Google API, not so much in the sync tool, but the sync tool exposes bugs in the Google API. So things like the photos come down without geo tagging. So even though your phone may have tagged them and they're uploaded and you can see the tag in the web UI, they come down stripped. There are issues linked from the GitHub repository, but we'll link to that in the show notes.
Well, I would be interested to know what our listeners are doing about their photo backup services. So if you're doing something clever, please write to show@ubuntupodcast.org and let us know. And with that, we'll move on to the community news and events, I think. So for reasons, we're recording a little bit late this week that has a nice silver lining, which is we can talk about the 1910 beta release. So as we record this earlier today, Ubuntu 1910 and the associated flavors had their final betas released. Ubuntu, obviously, desktop 1910 beta is out, and we'll have links in the show notes to where you can find all of the glorious details. But I think the headline feature that I'm most interested in around this release is all of the hard work that Daniel Van Vogt has done around the performance enhancements. This has been widely reported in the Linux and open source media. And while we were at a company sprint last week in Paris, we got to see the man himself on stage talk to us about, you know, everything he'd done to profile these issues and some of the misconceptions that people had made about where they felt the problems were. But he actually did the work to identify where the problems really were, you know, using science, and then fix those problems.
So is this specific to a part of the system, or is this just anywhere there's a performance issue in any of Ubuntu?
So this is specifically the desktop, and the area that Daniel's been focusing on is GNOME Shell. And in his presentation, he said, you know, there were lots of people that in the bug reports were making, you know, claims like, well, there's JavaScript in the shell, that must be the problem. And, you know, things like that. And he went away untainted by prior knowledge and actually went and profiled things and figured out for himself where the latency existed and then went and addressed those latency issues.
Is he doing snaps next?
No. One of our colleagues, Marcus Tomlinson, has been working on profiling where the snap performance issues exist and has been knocking down those hurdles.
Oh, cool.
So after watching Daniel do his talk, his lightning talk, I immediately upgraded to 1910. So I'm running 1910 now. And he's right. It is lovely.
Is it faster?
It is, yeah, noticeably. Like even like stuff like Alt Tab and stuff. You can certainly feel it.
Oh really? Wow.
Obviously it's not finished yet, so I wouldn't recommend, unless you're a, you know, keen expert, I wouldn't recommend normal people upgrade until October.
So at this point, I think it's important to point out that, yes, the beta is out. And certainly, you know, some of the things I see in the community are we announce a beta release and then we get a slew of comments, which is beta, not interested, will wait for final. I tell you what, why not break a habit? Why not go and grab the beta and install it? And actually give it a try, because it might be that you've got the laptop that has a particular problem that nobody else will see. And you can highlight an issue that gets fixed for the final release that will benefit lots of people in the end. So I invite everyone to come and download one of the flavors and test it and see if you can find any issues. And Mark, which other flavor has posted a release announcement for 1910?
Well, one of the other flavors that have is Lubuntu.
And what did they have to say?
They haven't said much other than inviting people to test it and, you know, thanking the people involved. But one of the particular things that they've highlighted is they ran their own Lubuntu wallpaper contest on their forum, and they have selected a winner. Although they've not said who the winner is, they've just posted their sort of information about how they came up with the winning entry. So maybe you've got to install it and see what the winning entry was.
I did install it. I did some testing last night, inside information. It did not go smoothly, this beta release. So a few of us were up quite late last night, making sure everything was okay in the end. And I did install, I think I installed all of the flavors at some point. And the Lubuntu wallpaper is very pretty, but I don't know if they're shipping the winning entry, because I think I've seen that wallpaper before.
Oh, no, it does say the wallpapers didn't make it to this beta release. Okay.
Ah, there we go. That will make sense. So then by final, there'll be a new wallpaper and the winning entrant will be outed, I assume.
Kubuntu also has a 1910 beta, which features Plasma 5.16 and KDE applications 19.04.3. So this is a version bump to the stuff that makes Kubuntu awesome, which is obviously the Plasma desktop and all the KDE apps. And you kind of have to click through a little bit to get to a KDE announcement to actually see the meaty details. And the KDE Plasma team have rewritten a notification system. And something that I noticed is they have a do not disturb mode and more intelligent history, which groups notifications together, and critical notifications in full screen apps. So I think they've really done a lot of good work there so that you don't just get overwhelmed with lots of notifications and they aren't all mixed up. They're kind of, you know, grouped in a sane way, but also having a do not disturb mode is awesome, especially if you're, you know, giving a presentation or something, or you just don't want to be disturbed while you're focusing on other work.
I hear that do not disturb and notification centers are flavor of the month right now.
So I hear. There's a whole bunch of other stuff in there, like improved themes on the login screen, better wallpaper slideshow stuff, and there's just a whole ton of stuff in there, but you have to kind of click through. So I'd recommend, if you're interested in trying out Kubuntu, if you click through to the Kubuntu announcement and then go through from there to the KDE website where it lists all the updates, the official press announcement for the KDE update, it's worth reading through that because there's stuff in there that I may not have even noticed if I was still running KDE. So it's good to see.
And if, you know, if Plasma is your jam, there's 3 weeks until final release. This is there's the weekend coming up. Go and download an ISO and give it a test in a VM or a spare laptop and send your feedback back to the team. You may find something important that will help them improve it for final release. And another flavor that announced was Ubuntu Budgie. They write really nice release notes. And I've taken some inspiration from the way David has been doing the release notes over at Ubuntu Budgie. And one of the things they've been working on is improving the accessibility of Ubuntu Budgie in 1910. So they've now added an application called Magnus, which is created by a friend of the show, Stuart Langridge, which is a screen magnifier. And they've also added an on-screen keyboard capability to better service you know, their community members who need those facilities. And, you know, Magnus is a project that is being contributed to by Budgie and Ubuntu Mate. And Stuart's done a fabulous job on that. It's something we've been sorely lacking outside of, you know, KDE and GNOME for a long time. And they've done a whole slew of fixes in the desktop environment. If you read their release notes, there's all sorts of details in there about, you know, lots of little nitpicks and paper cuts and things that they've fixed. They've now got alt tab previews, which look very pretty. And they're also seeding a project that I created called Mate Optimus, which is, Mark, that's basically your idea.
I take full credit for doing none of the work.
And rightly so. You know, 4 years later on, it still turns out that was a really good idea. And that's a way to switch between the power profiles on hybrid graphic systems with NVIDIA and Intel GPUs.
Well, since you mention Ubuntu Mate.
Did I do that?
You did.
He does that.
Ubuntu Mate has also done an announcement for the beta release. And this release has been focused on lots and lots of paper cuts. So small issues all over the place, which generally add up to an amount of annoyance.
That was the cut and thrust of this release. There was lots of problems in lots of different places. So we've just tried to address as many of those as possible in the last 6 months. And I'm really pleased with the results.
I think it's worth clicking through to that page. It's just a beautiful page that is the way release notes should be for a new version of Ubuntu.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
And I would like the other, or I think it would be beneficial if the other flavors could find time to get theirs looking as pretty as that, because it really stands out and it's very clear what's changed and it's an appealing page.
I have to say, when I was reading through all of these before the show, the main Ubuntu release notes are a bit uninspiring in the way that they're sort of presented.
What, the mailing list post?
No, I'm looking at the wiki page.
Ah, right.
The one which is actually, the release notes page. I mean, obviously, well, I suppose this isn't final yet because it's going to be the final release notes. But it looks like a wiki page. It doesn't look like a sort of announcement to the world.
No, you're right. That needs to change. I think there's room for, by 2004, to us to get everyone up to the same level. And I think this is like a perfect place for community people to step up. And just like, it's not hard to write a bit of markdown and throw in an image here and there.
And emoji. Plenty of emoji.
Yeah, well,
Mixed feelings.
You make a good point, though, in that, you know, writing release notes, not even writing them, you know, because you can write boring release notes, but making the release notes interesting is something that somebody who is divorced from the development process can do throughout the development cycle so that there is something interesting and engaging to see at the end of that development cycle. In much the same way, we've only been successful in knocking down all of these little issues by the influx of half a dozen people who are really motivated testers. And if it wasn't for those testers, we wouldn't have made the ground up that we have in the last 6 months. And that is another non-developer function. But the impact they've had on the project has been quite profound.
Well, it's only a couple of weeks until release, so if people want to step up, if any of you listening are, you know, aligned with any one of the flavors in terms of that's your favorite, then why don't you just like join their IRC channel, find out where they hang out, offer your services and offer to help spruce things up and make things, you know, human readable and friendly and pretty, and maybe throw a screenshot in there or something like that. I think that's a great way for people to get contributing.
So, other than the 19.10 release, what else has been going on in the Ubuntu world, Alan?
There have been no controversies at all. Oh, no, wait. So, there's been an update to the i386 apocalypse that happened earlier in the year when we were, stroke, were not, removing i386 capability from Ubuntu. And a path forward has been posted on the Ubuntu Discourse by Steve Langacek, who's known as Vorlon on the forum. And he's talked about the plan going forward and what the plan is for supporting specific 32-bit packages in the Ubuntu archive and what the commitment will be. And he's asked for community feedback. And I think this is a super valuable process because this allows people who are deeply wedded to 32-bit applications on their 64-bit system, for whatever reason, maybe it's an old game, maybe it's an old piece of software that integrates with another piece of hardware and nobody sells that hardware anymore and nobody maintains that software, and maybe it's proprietary and you can't get the source code so you can't rebuild it. You know, all those kind of maybes. Maybe there's something you're super passionate about. If you can identify what the libraries are, which is not actually that hard to do, identify what libraries are needed by the application and offer that up as a potential, you know, library that should be maintained in order to keep that piece of software. And obviously, if a lot of people use that software, then potentially that'll get added to the list and it will continue to be maintained. But that's all up in the air at the moment, because I don't think they, you know, they don't want to just maintain everything, because then they'll be back in the same position they were by actually just keeping all of the packages, and that's not really viable.
Yes.
But it's an interesting thread, and it's good to see that they're doing a bit of community outreach in order to make sure that they've got, you know, a good handle on what packages are needed, with the ultimate goal being not to break stuff that is running on end user systems.
Right. And this is also a continuation of the previous point. Now is a great time to go and install one of the 1910 betas and try and run your favorite 32-bit applications and make sure it all still works, because you've got time now to feed back into the development process so we can fix things. So if you have your favorite game or your favorite scanner application or your favorite, I think...
We've all got a favorite scanner application, Martin, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Go and try and install these things. And if it doesn't work, there'll be a link in the show notes where you can provide your feedback and we can gather that up and hopefully remedy that before final release.
Well, to be fair, probably they will still work. Because we haven't actually yoinked any packages out, and so it will still work. But it, you know, it's a good idea to identify what libraries they're going to be needed by the application. I mean, chances are we've identified the vast majority of them, and actually it won't be a problem. But it's always good to have people test this stuff rather than us get, you know, a year down the line and we've deprecated some library that seems to be used by no one. And then someone turns up and says, hey, I've got a deployment of 30,000 machines that all use this piece of 32-bit software from 20 years ago. Yeah, we just don't know. And that's why this whole outreach process is there. Anyway, that's that. Follow the link. Read the post.
And finally, in Mir is Not Dead news, the Mir team have posted a guide on the Ubuntu Discourse about how to port Mate applications to Wayland.
Why specifically Mate applications?
Well, they were looking for a desktop environment that was very much embedded in the sort of GTK and X11 past to use as a lab rat, a guinea pig, for getting working on Wayland. And the Mate Upstream team have been, you know, assisting in that. And it's now at a point where you can run a bare bones Mate session on Wayland using Mir as the display server and compositor. And where we need to go now as the Mate team is, how do we port the rest of the suite of applications so that they run on top of Wayland as well? So this is a niche skill. The Mate team is small. And so the ever awesome William Wold sat down with me for a couple of hours while we were in Paris last week and has written up a post about how you port your, let's say, GTK applications with legacy to Wayland. And although it was with a focus on Mate, I think this would be equally applicable to, you know, XFCE and Elementary and... not so much Budgie, because they're most of the way there. But for anyone else, you know, who's got GTK applications and they're looking to make them Wayland compliant, then this post will help you get there.
Okay, I have a naive question.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't one of the things about using a a toolkit like GTK that abstracts the complexity of things like whether you're running on X or Wayland, or is there quite a bit of work to do to, you know, fix the compatibility between different environments?
No, you're absolutely right. You know, if your application is just speaking GTK and GDK, then you're golden. The fact is that desktop environments are complex things, and they quite often have X-specific calls littered throughout the system. And it's mopping up those and porting those to the GTK equivalents.
Right, so you actually have to add some bits to some apps to say, if you're running on X, do this. If you're running on Wayland, do that.
Exactly.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, and you know what William has also explained is how you create an environment that doesn't disturb your daily driver desktop environment, so that you can actually develop on this stuff and test it without actually having to tear down the whole of your desktop environment to do so. So it's a, you know, it's a development environment guide, it's a porting guide, it's a, these are the brick walls you're going to run into, and these are the people, you know, when you do hit one of those brick walls, these are the people that can help, you know, advise you as to how to get beyond the really hard stuff. And we have some events. Mark, what's our first event?
It's UbuntuCon Europe. It's the 10th to the 13th of October in Sintra, Portugal.
Yeah, and registrations are open. So if you are going or plan to go to UbuCon Europe, head to the website, link in the show notes, submit your registration so they know how many people are turning up, and also so I know how many T-shirts we need to order. Alan, what's our next event?
OCamp is 19th to 20th of October in Madchester, UK. Yeah, come along, go to OCamp. I'm in the middle of writing a lightning talk or something to do, or I guess unconference talk, which I may or may not get finished by the time that comes around, because I've only got a month. 3 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Also, buy tickets if you're planning to come and you can afford to do so. Mark, the next event is?
Talk about Clear Linux, which is Saturday, 2nd of November at 3:30 in the Harcourt Hotel in Dublin, hosted by the Dublin Linux community.
Wonderful. And our last event is?
Linux Application Summit from the 11th to the 15th of November in Barcelona, Spain. We, the organizing committee, have just been reviewing all the submitted talks. And boy, oh boy, there were a lot of talks submitted. So it's been really tricky to fill the schedule because there's just so many of them. And we unfortunately haven't been able to find slots for everyone.
That's a nice problem to have, though, right?
Well, yeah, it kind of is. It kind of is, but it makes you feel super bad when you've got, like, you know, a ton of people who've submitted talks and only some of them can feature. But I guess that's the way of everything. But I think we'll publish the schedule sometime soon.
Fabulous. That's the events. Next is the news headlines. Okay, and in the news recently, we have learned that Richard Stallman has resigned as president and board member of the Free Software Foundation, and also his position as visiting scientist at MIT.
Yeah, well, everyone seems to have covered this already, but, you know.
Yes.
Feels like it was a long time coming.
Yeah, it does.
So the FSF and GNU are different bodies, right?
Well, GNU is a project. FSF is a software foundation.
Right. But Stallman is staying on at GNU, is that right?
He is continuing to be the leader of the GNU project.
Okay.
Yes, but he has resigned, yeah, from the... he's no longer in a leadership position at the Free Software Foundation, at least.
Have the FSF said who will be taking over his position yet?
I don't believe so, no.
I don't think they've announced anything, no.
Mm.
So yes, it'll be interesting to see, well, firstly, how that's decided, because I don't think there has been a president of the Free Software Foundation that's not Richard Stallman, has there?
Oh, right, yeah, okay. It's difficult because, I mean, putting aside all the reasons why he's no longer there, there's the fact that he's still the leader of the GNU project and he's still a public figure means that he will still be in the public eye, I guess, and he will almost certainly still be invited to events and will still talk at events. And
do you think he'll still be invited to events?
Yeah, I think he probably will. I think when you, if you look at any of the online commentary about him stepping down, there were, as far as I could see, almost a 50-50 Brexit-style split between people who were supportive of him, you know, being removed from office, and other people who were fully supportive of him and saw this was, you know, completely constructed and would almost certainly be willing to, you know, have him talk at their event. I don't know if those people are in a position to have him talk at the event, but I don't think this means Richard Stallman is going away by any stretch of the imagination. I think he's just, I think it is the right time. I think I have for a very long time thought somebody else should run the Free Software Foundation.
A few years ago, before I joined Canonical, I did a talk at the Roundtable exhibition in the UK about free software and open source and how its ethos was aligned with, you know, the charitable work that the Roundtable does. And I was effectively paid to give that presentation. And I used that money to pay into the FSF because I thought, well, I don't need this money. So how can I better use it? So since that point, I've effectively been an FSF member and I get the literature through the post regularly. And I have to say, I'm a little bit disillusioned since having gone through that process. So like you, Alan, I felt like, you know, the FSF has needed a different leader, let's just say that. And for our listeners who are wondering why we're not being very specific about why Richard Stallman has stood down and what this controversy is and that you don't already know, then do your own research. We are a family-friendly show. This is a tricky subject to cover for us, so we're being deliberately vague on that account. Personally, I think this is a good time for a change in the leadership of the FSF, and I look forward to seeing what direction they take.
And I do hope that they don't just take someone who, you know, just toes the line that he's already trodden, as it were. I hope they bring in someone with a different approach, because I think it really needs it. I think a lot of the rhetoric from the Free Software Foundation, obviously they've got a particular view of the world which they want to promote, but the way that they've done that in the past, it puts people off. Like, there's too much zealotry and you're only going to convert people who are already zealots.
It's very difficult because, you know, ideally what you want is someone dynamic, someone who has personality, someone who can has a stage presence, who can command and, you know, get an audience and, you know, people will listen to. But those qualities I've yet to see in someone who is a massive free software zealot. Like some, and I realize that's a pejorative term, but I mean someone who is hardcore free software. There aren't that many who could command an audience and people will listen to and not just think, haha, it's the weirdo again.
Let's watch this space. And as this develops, we'll be sure to follow it and let you know who the candidates are. Alan, what else has been going on?
Oh, more bad news. The GNOME Foundation are defending against a patent lawsuit. Now, there's not a huge amount of news here. There's like three lines on the GNOME blog, and we've seen mention from other organizations like the FSF saying that they support, they're fully behind the GNOME Foundation. But essentially, this looks like a patent troll who happens to have a patent for wireless image distribution system and method, which is distinctly vague.
Like all the best patents.
Well, yes, for some value of best. And this alleges that Shotwell infringes that patent. Now, there's not a lot of detail, obviously, because there's legal action going on.
But you can read the patent and read the claim.
Right.
Yes.
Though I did find it, yeah, because saying the company looks like a patent troll. If you read through the sort of opening of the case, it describes them as having a virtual office in Texas, which is what a lot of these companies do because Texas courts have historically been sympathetic to patent trolls.
Right. Specifically West Texas.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just so obviously not an actual software company who are being wronged and losing money because Shotwell lets you transfer photos over Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I worked for a company a few years ago who was pursued by a patent troll. We weren't alone, as all patent trolls operate on, you know, going after many organizations. And the virtual office that this particular organization are based in is the exact same address of the office that we were pursued by in a completely different domain, which is to do with aviation. And our patent infringement was the fact that we were using a traffic light system of red, green and yellow to signify the priority of which, safety event.
I would hope in the aviation industry you used red, amber and green and not red, green and amber. Otherwise, there's going to be all kinds of disasters going on. But yes.
Yes, you're quite correct.
Yes, I fear my mixer may be infringing that patent as well.
I feel like we're not going to hear much about this until it ends up in court. But the fact that Gnome Foundation say they intend to vigorously defend against this baseless suit does make me wonder their legal bill is possibly going to be substantial, potentially, if this goes to court and they have to, or whether it will get dismissed. We just don't know.
Well, in the case of the company that I worked for, we ended up settling with the patent troll because that was cheaper than paying the legal bills to actually defend our position, even though it was utterly defensible.
Yep, and I expect that's a big part of their model.
And unfortunately, I don't think we've got time to go into our last item, so we will leave it there for the news this week.
We know you've got a Facebook account, so stop sharing cat photos for a moment and like or share our posts so your friends and family can find the Ubuntu podcast.
And that was it. That was episode 25 of season 12 of the Ubuntu podcast. It's nice to be back.
It's good to have you back.
Oh, thank you very much.
Are you going to stick around for next week?
I am, because next week I've got a long overdue review of the Dell Precision 3540 Developer Edition.
Ooh. Nice.
We're also got a bumper crop of command line love, and we're going to go over all of the listener feedback. So, between now and then, if you've got feedback, share at ubuntupodcast.org.